This is the Countdown to Mickey podcast, where we take a new look and deep dive into the things we love at Walt Disney World and Disneyland. This is Michelle.
And this is Steve.
Welcome back to this week's episode, number 40. This is week 11? Is it 11?
Yes, episode 11.
And we are talking about today...
The ride is Spaceship Earth.
And this is in Epcot at Walt Disney World. Disney says you travel through time and explore the remarkable history of human communication from the Stone Age to the Computer Age. It's any height, any age, and it's considered a slow, dark ride. So it opened with Epcot opening October 1, 1982. It is in the iconic ball, or as actually known as a... geodesic sphere.
Yes, and before we go into the structure itself, I wanted to ask you about the name, Spaceship Earth. Do you, or in your research, did you read anything about where that name came from and what it means?
I'm assuming they did Spaceship Earth because it looks like you're riding a spaceship and it's a ball like Earth. Is that a good answer?
Yes, I guess. But do you know where that term Spaceship Earth originated?
No.
So the geodesic sphere was made famous by one particular person, an American architect, and his name is Richard Buckminster Fuller. And he was famous for many reasons, but one of them being designing and getting the patent for... geodesic domes. And so he actually wasn't the inventor of geodesic domes, but he was the one that made it popular in the United States. And one other thing that Richard Buckminster Fuller did was he wrote books. And one of his books actually popularized...
Spaceship Earth?
Well, it wasn't called Spaceship Earth, but he was the one that popularized the term Spaceship Earth. And he published the book Operating Manual for Spaceship Earth. And he was the one that basically popularized that phrase that...
Is that a popular phrase?
Well, back in the 60s, he popularized the phrase Spaceship Earth, and he helped people realize that we are on planet Earth that has extremely limited resources, and we're soaring through space. And so he basically said, we need to be like... a spaceship's crew, and we need to take care of all of these resources. We need to take care of our ship, and we need to make sure that we're not destroying everything on Earth. And so his book kind of popularized that idea that...
So that's really about popularizing conservation?
And so I think this idea of Spaceship Earth isn't just a simple one that became a name of a ride. It's something that was developed in terms of the philosophy and this idea that we are soaring through space.
Yeah. Cool, Steve. So let's talk about how it came to be built. So it took over 2 years, and Disney hired MIT engineers to conduct studies on the sphere so they knew how it could be constructed. The proper name for it, as Steve said, is the geodesic sphere, and it's actually two spheres, one inside that holds the ride, and the second one is on the exterior. Can you go into the engineering about the sphere?
The engineering of the sphere itself in terms of the outer structure, again, it's one of the more famous geodesic spheres that were created. And the reason why it became so popular is that back in the 60s when he started really kind of using this in architecture, since it was kind of, it's a self-supporting structure. And so what that means is like the outer structure, the shape itself is holding the weight of everything. And so the way that the civil engineering works of the structure, you have to be very careful of the joints where two members come together. And the members, you can imagine a member as a plank of 2x4 wood. Mm-hmm. And so in civil engineering, you have to make sure there's not too much stress or strain when you're building a structure. And so you want to make sure that those members won't break under the weight of the rest of the structure. So like when you're building a house, you have to make sure that there's certain load-bearing walls that are carrying most of the weight and then distributing it through the foundation. What makes a geodesic dome or a geodesic sphere special is that you don't need a load-bearing wall because this structure itself basically maintains and holds the weight. And so you don't have to have additional structure to support it.
So do you think we should have a dome house?
So, yeah, there were actually many dome houses created in the 60s, and that was a very popular movement. But the reason why people stopped making them is that the actual construction costs end up being more because you have to cut more triangles. So you actually have to cut wood in more custom ways than you do with a normal house. And so now everything's obviously prefabricated, but even making those cuts to make the corners of triangles, that made it so that it wasn't worth it cost savings wise for the structure itself. But there's still some houses I know. Back in our old neighborhood, we used to drive by a geodesic a very unique house that was probably built in the 60s when it was popular. But yeah, so Buckminster Fuller made that structure popular, and that structure is continuing to be studied throughout science. And so in chemistry, there's a certain type of fullerene, which is, again, a type of carbon structure. It's called Buckminster fullerene, and it has a formula of C60. And it's actually one of the most common naturally occurring fullerene. So it's found in soot, and which is, again,
I don't really know what that means.
So the
tree was a long time ago for me.
Yeah, a fullerene is basically how the atoms are organized. And so when you think of, if you looked at the structure of, let's say, a diamond, the structure of the atoms, the carbon atoms that make up a diamond, are organized in a certain shape, in a certain
structure.
And
that's called fullerene? And
yeah, so that that's, like, if you zoom in really, really close and you look at its structure, that's called a fullerene. And so C60 is, again, a type of fullerene that looks like a soccer ball.
Oh.
And so since Buckminster Fuller essentially made that shape popular, they said, oh, well, let's name it after Buckminster Fuller. And so that's why it's called Buckminster Fullerene. And the shape is determined by how the carbon atoms are bonded together. And again, it's the most common naturally occurring fullerene. This structure isn't just man-made structure. It's happening in nature as well in terms of how atoms are structured to make it so they're stable. And so, it's what makes Buckminster fullerene so special is that it's the largest object observed to exhibit wave-particle duality. And so,
I don't know what that means.
So wave-particle duality is a part of quantum mechanics, but it's basically the idea that every single molecule on Earth acts as both a wave and a particle. So the most common instance of that is light. So light, if you put it through like a double slit experiment, light is proven to be a wave. It acts like a wave, but in certain cases, it also acts like a particle. Like Albert Einstein got his Nobel Prize for proving that light's a particle and it can interact with electrons. And that's why solar panels work, which I'll bring back to the importance of Spaceship Earth and how it's actually using electricity from solar panels. And so,
oh, it is the ride?
Yeah, so we'll talk about that a little bit later.
I didn't know that. To be honest, I did not do a lot of research this week because I broke down and booked a Disney World trip and have been planning that all week instead of doing research.
So we will talk about the trip later, but to get back to the structure itself. So again, this geodesic dome, geodesic sphere, what's interesting about this particular sphere, so Spaceship Earth, the outer sphere that I'm going to be focusing on, like Michelle said, there's two spheres, the inner sphere where the ride is constructed, and then the outer sphere that is so famous that you basically associate. When I think of Disney World, I think of this sphere. I think pretty much every picture.
You do? But yes. This is just Epcot. I only think of this with Epcot.
So, well, maybe it's just me, that the fact that I grew up in Disneyland. So when I think of Disneyland, I think of like Mickey and the castle.
Okay.
And then, but with Disney World, growing up, I used to always see pictures of like
the Epcot ball.
Right, of the Epcot ball. And so for the longest time, I always thought that Disney World was just the Epcot ball. Like I thought there was only one park and it was just the Epcot ball. And so I always assumed that that's what made Disney World special, was just the Epcot ball. And so that's why I think I associate Disney World with just this particular structure. And so again, what's interesting about Spaceship Earth is that it's a class 2 geodesic polyhedron. and it has a frequency of division equal to 8. Now, to me, this is what gets to be so cool and how much depth you can go into.
And you're starting to get over my head.
So how much depth you can go into with your kids. So math can show so much beauty in patterns and what patterns are capable of. What's interesting about a class 2 geodesic polyhedron is it has a specific type of triangle. And I know you looked this up in your research. Do you know what triangles construct the outer
isosceles triangle, which means that two sides of the triangle are the same size?
Correct. Yes. So two sides are the same size. One side is not.
And correct.
So a class 1 geodesic polyhedron has...
Oh, they're all symmetrical?
Correct. Do you know what that's called when all sides are the same of a triangle?
I looked it up, but trisosceles?
That's a good guess. But a class 1, it's called equilateral triangle.
Oh, okay.
So an equilateral triangle has all sides the same.
And okay.
So the reason why...
So what's closer to the perfect sphere?
So you can't get a perfect sphere. That's the whole reason why you make a shape like this is that, again, the structure itself makes it look like a sphere.
No, but I'm saying which triangle, the isosceles or the...
So the class 1 or the class 2,
right.
That's not what's important about the...
That's what I
want to
know.
So that's not what determines how close to the sphere you get. What determines how close to a sphere you get is how many times you repeat the pattern. And so the frequency of the pattern. And so if you get higher frequency, so example, if you get to a 8 frequency,
mm-hmm.
you're basically getting almost to a sphere. So you're right. It basically just makes it so the sphere appears smoother. And so, so how many times it repeats determines how close to a circle you get. Now you could technically, it's called the frequency of division. You can technically go up to infinity. So obviously the higher the number you get, so if you get to a frequency of division of 1,000, let's say, you're going to barely be able to tell that it's not a circle, not a perfect sphere. But when it comes to actually engineering something, you're very rarely going to get past a frequency of 8 or 9. And so that's what Spaceship Earth is. It has a frequency, a repeating frequency of 8, and then it's a class 2 geodesic polyhedron. And so there's lots and lots of these triangles on the outside of Spaceship Earth that, again, support the entire structure itself. And so if you look at something that we do in my engineering classes a lot is we build bridges and you do computer simulations to look at the stress strain graph on all of the members. And so if you looked at a stress strain graph on the Spaceship Earth sphere,
mm-hmm.
it would be perfectly distributed throughout every single one of the members.
So I should always feel very safe going in the sphere.
Right? You should. Again, it's one of those things where I'm sure there's even more additional structure on top of the actual, because that's more for the visual, I think.
Oh, okay.
Again, there's probably even more additional structure below and inside that help make everything secure. But again, this is...
Do you know what I find interesting about the sphere?
I would love to hear what you find interesting.
Your stuff is great, but do you ever notice if water comes off the sphere? Like when it's pouring down rain, do you notice that it like pours off the side?
I can't say that I've ever been when it's been pouring rain.
Well, if we would, it doesn't. Actually, they built in all these little gutters and channels, so you'll almost never see water come off the sphere, which I never realized, and it all takes it out to the lake. And the other really cool thing is that there's a trapdoor on the top of Epcot Ball. And you can actually go up there and there's like a small area where you can stand without falling off.
Did you know there used to be a giant hand on the side of the dome?
Yeah, they did it for 2000 and they kept it to about 2007, but it was very ugly. So everybody was happy that they took it down.
Right. We had obviously never been to Disney World before.
The last few years.
So I never even knew that there was a giant hand until I saw the picture, which is very interesting.
So the inside is a 15-minute dark ride, and it demonstrates how the advancements in human communication have helped to create the future one step at a time. So first you travel back in time to witness the origins of the prehistoric man. Then, through invention of the alphabet, to the creation of the printing press, to today's communication advancements, including telecommunication and mass communication. And at the end of the ride, the passengers have a chance to create their own future using touch screens that are embedded into the ride cars. So some of the different areas are very interesting. Do you have anything specific you want to talk about with the communication, or you just want me to kind of go from room to room?
Yeah, I think generally I love the theme of this ride. And again, I think...
Does it kind of remind you of Carousel of Progress?
Yeah, a little bit. I think what makes this so special, and maybe it's just that I've been teaching a class on scientific thinking, and I've been looking at the timeline of human progress quite a bit lately. And it is truly amazing how inventions related to communication... it drastically increases what we're capable of doing as a humanity.
Right.
And so, for example, if you think of human history, for the first hundreds of thousands of years that humans were around, we really
didn't have any communication.
Didn't have much progress at all. Exactly. Didn't have much progress at all because there was no communication.
Yeah.
And as soon as we started doing...
there was cave paintings.
Right.
That was our first communication.
Right. And so, as soon as we have some archaeological evidence of written stories, whether it be on walls or on papyrus, like that all of a sudden.
Yeah, then they did the hieroglyphics. The Egyptians created the hieroglyphics. And then the Phoenicians, they created the simple common alphabet so that trade and communication became easier. And that was like a true turning point.
Right. And that's what I want to get back to scientific thinking and the history of mankind, is that every time there's a
but then increase it burned in communication, to the ground.
Every time there's an increase in communication, there's a huge increase in our knowledge, a huge increase in scientific thinking. And so you can actually map out some of the most important discoveries based on how humans were communicating. And so, again, once we started to have, like you said, hieroglyphics, even writing on papyrus, then all of a sudden mathematics takes off. So you can see how, like, our ability to use mathematics to build things like pyramids and to better communicate ideas, like, is directly tied to what our methods of communication.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, obviously, the next big kind of increase in knowledge was the printing press. And I think that's the next room.
And they made it so, you know, the printing press that they have is exactly like the Gutenberg replica.
Oh, interesting.
It's like the exact size and everything.
Yeah. And so, again, the Gutenberg printing press, all of a sudden you can make books, you can spread information, and then that's when we have this huge first scientific revolution. We go from believing that the Earth is the center of the universe to all of a sudden we realize actually the Earth is orbiting around the sun. And so science, Galileo and Newton is able to publish his Principia, and we get to spread this idea of physics. And so all of a sudden, science takes this huge leap, but then what's interesting is it stalls out for about another 500 years.
And then we get the industrial-sized printing presses and newspapers, radio, telephones, movies, telegraphs. And then we get to see...
Well, hold on. Before that, you said a keyword, the industrialization of the printing press, or the industrial revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, we have this huge leap forward because of the industrial revolution, because of this idea that we can use steam. And again, we talked about the steam engine with our train episode. We talked about how that increased access, increased the spread of ideas. And then all of a sudden, we have another huge push forward in the 1900s, and that's when some of the kind of most important scientists started to do some amazing things. We started to explore the atom. We started to, again, spread information and science at this huge rate that we haven't seen before. And so in the 1900s, again, you have this huge bump in progress. And then the next room, I think you were about to say...
Oh, there's a man building a computer in his garage in California. Who do you think that is?
Steve Jobs.
Disney actually says it's a compilation of all those who made efforts into creating PCs.
Personal computers. But what fascinates me is that even though we have computers and we've been able to basically multiply our communication ability by 1,000, I don't think we have been able to increase our scientific knowledge by 1,000 yet at this point. And so that's why we're in this interesting time period. And I think that's what the ride kind of stops at. That's where the ride.
Yeah, and then you just go into the planetarium.
Right.
And I, so, and then you go backwards throughout the rest of the ride.
But I think that's a great analogy, kind of, if you look at from 1950 to today, after we, and I talked about this in one of our other episodes, after we discovered the DNA double helix.
And put a man on the moon.
Well, yes, but let's focus on, well, that's true. That was a huge piece. But the DNA double helix, the splitting of the atom, once we did those two huge things, yes, we put a man on the moon, but we haven't had as big of growth since that time period. And so that is also symbolized in the ride where you just kind of stop.
Go into space. Computer.
But I think, and again, we'll probably talk about this at some point, they are planning on upgrading it to
well,
fix that part.
Well, I'm not sure. So they were going to do it sounds like a really awesome upgrade. They announced it that they're going to do a refurb. It was going to start this May, but is on an indefinite hold due to COVID-19. It was going to be updated by a new narrative about the human experience and the art of storytelling. There was going to be an ethereal story light that would guide guests through the attraction. The new exit would be Dreamer's Point, which is an elevated area, which you could see a panoramic view of the park and lush gardens with a wishing tree, interactive fountain, and a statue of Walt Disney. But that is postponed indefinitely.
Right. And I read one of the main reasons for that upgrade was because of that last part of the ride not being very exciting. Like, everyone thought the ride up was really cool, and then you don't really do much on
what?
The top.
I actually love the planetarium, and I love doing the interactive game. I mean, I think it's silly, but you know, it takes pictures of you, and then you, like, pick your choices, and then it, like, says what you're going to do in 20 years or, you know, what your job or your living situation is going to be. I always thought that part was kind of cute.
Oh, got it. Yeah, one of the articles said it's that interviewed Imagineers, they said it's always been the descent or the second half of Spaceship Earth that has caused trouble. And so that seems to be just
they caused mechanical trouble or?
I think just caused trouble with the storyline. And I think, like you said, the shift to storytelling, I love that shift. Because, yes, communication is important, but there's something. Like, there's a more fundamental reason for why we've been enhancing communication, and that's our ability to tell stories. Mm-hmm. And I think that gets lost on a lot of people.
Not Disney.
Right. Well, I know. That's Disney's one of the experts. But I think most people who are kind of going through the world are not realizing how they're being manipulated by the way people tell stories. And so a lot of the marketing that is out there for products, it gets us to buy things.
It's all about telling the story.
It's all about telling the story. It's all about how we are positioned as kind of the hero of that story. If we just buy this, we'll become the hero. We'll be able to go along our own story a little bit better. And so, yeah, I think putting that storytelling in the forefront of the ride, and I think as part of, like, showing how humans have made progress, I think it's going to be cool.
I heard it's going to be partially Moana-themed.
Well.
And I was like, how does that going to be in the ride?
I didn't read anything about that, but I think...
Maybe I'm mistaken.
I think what's happening is the park is... They're trying to make the park more integrated with the different sections. And so they'll have, like, the global showcase. The Spaceship Earth will become the center point for... What was the new section? I think there's 4 new sections for Epcot.
I thought it was 3, but I don't remember.
So the map that I have... Let me see if I can find it. So, yeah, the map that I have has Epcot being the World Celebration section. And then there's the World Showcase section, which is all around the world of Epcot. And then there's the World Nature, and then there's the World Discovery. So there's supposedly there's going to be 4 new sections of Epcot, with the Spaceship Earth being the focal point for World Celebration. So celebrating everything we've done.
Got it.
On Earth.
I think that this ride is the biggest structure in Epcot?
In Epcot?
Uh-huh.
Or in Disney.
In Epcot?
I think this is the biggest structure in Epcot.
I read that you could fit the whole Spaceship Earth in the Nemo Aquarium.
No way.
That's what I read.
Inside the Nemo. I guess the Nemo Aquarium is pretty big.
The Nemo Aquarium is huge.
Wow. I didn't even realize that.
I don't know if that's true.
Well, no, I think that makes sense. Like, if you go, especially when you go in that circle room of the Nemo Aquarium, you realize,
right,
like,
yeah,
you're under a lot of water and you're...
I know. I always wonder how thick that glass is.
Yeah, it's very thick. I'm sure they engineered that to make sure that that would be
safe. We'll find out soon.
Forever. Yeah, no. I don't think we'll find out anytime soon.
No, we're going to find out when we talk about that ride.
Oh, I thought you were talking about if the glass breaks. I was like, no. So, yeah, I think maybe you thought about Moana because, so Disney CEO Bob
Chapek,
he said that the new scenes in Spaceship Earth will reflect the universal nature of the human experience. And so I think they may connect it to...
Oh, to nature. Because there was going to be an interactive fountain with Moana, but I think that's postponed too.
Well, I think that was going to be in the world nature section over by Nemo a little bit.
Right.
And so yeah, I don't think that may not be exactly a part of it. Right, not a part of Spaceship Earth.
So we'll have to see if it ever, hopefully in a couple of years when Disney recovers from this pandemic, they'll be able to redo the ride. But I will be going on it one more time, at least in its original form. So
before we go on to the ending, what do you think about the ending of the ride? Not the ending of the ride itself, but when you get off the ride and you walk.
I've never done anything.
Okay, so that's what I was curious about. Like, I was wondering if you played those games, like what you thought. Do you think it's a well-done area, or is it just too overwhelming? Why don't you play those games? I was just curious.
I don't know. I mean, I just don't feel a strong reason to stay, I guess.
There's always other things
to do. Yeah, I think I'd rather go on Test Track or Frozen or Soarin' or something.
Right. I mean, I think there's a lot of cool things. We don't typically stay a lot, but... I do remember seeing the illuminated globe that shows the hometown of all Spaceship Earth visitors for the day.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
Which is pretty cool. But there's some other cool games, too. There's a 3D game that challenges guests to reconstruct a human body. It's called Bodybuilder.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought you might like that as a doctor. There's a Super Driver, a driving simulation video game featuring vehicle accident and avoidance systems. It simulates what is supposed to be the future of driving. And so... it's kind of hilarious that, like, avoidance systems and vehicle accidents is the future of driving when we may just have fully autonomous vehicles. They keep talking about that.
Yeah, hopefully.
But, I mean, I think we'll
see.
I'm
ready to sit back and read a book while I drive.
Right, exactly. We'll see if our boys ever really have to drive. Who knows? We'll see. And there's Power City. It's a large digital shuffleboard-style game that has guests racing around the board to power their city. And again, I want to talk about that a little bit more just because Epcot was always designed to...
Oh, yeah, you're going to talk about the solar power.
So Epcot was always designed to be one of the most environmentally friendly theme parks in the world. And so I can't remember the exact number, but they recycle, I think, 60% of the water in Epcot. And so they reuse it. And there are solar panels that I think offset like 40% of the electricity costs of the operating park. And so
I'm sure those solar fields are huge. Have you seen pictures of them?
Well, I didn't see a picture of the solar fields. There's actually solar panels on top of, I think, Test Track and a couple other attractions in Epcot. But there are, I'm sure there are lots of other solar fields around the area. But I think it's just so cool that, again, Epcot is trying to...
270-acre solar farm.
Oh, wow. Yeah, the one that I found just talked about the ones that were on the roof. And so I think even from...
Actually, the solar farm can power two of its theme parks.
Oh, there you go.
So it's quite more than what you thought.
Yeah, and so I think it's just cool, again, how Disney uses these themes to tie in... from like, hey, we're going to call a ride Spaceship Earth because of Buckminster Fuller's idea that we have limited resources on this Earth. We need to be taking care of it. And they're going to say, okay, we're not going to just stop at naming it Spaceship Earth. We're going to actually do our part in terms of using renewable energy, doing as much recycling as we can, not wasting resources. I think that's, again, just an amazing thing that the Imagineers do. They name a ride Spaceship Earth, but they also put it into practice in terms of using the resources as best as possible and not hurting this one spaceship that we have to float through the universe.
Right. So we will get to check out Spaceship Earth, at least in its original form, one more time as we are going back to Disney World this November.
Michelle broke down. We may not get through all 50 weeks of our countdown because we are going back to Disney.
So we'll get to re-experience these rides with a new appreciation and how they work, or at least half of them. And yeah, it should be a good time.
Yep, it'll be interesting to see what's open, what's closed, how they've changed it. Again, I guess I was wrong. I think back in episode one, I think I had a theory that they're going to change all the rides because they have everything shut down. And this is the first time it's been shut down, but it appears I was wrong about that.
Well, I heard they made some upgrades, but not probably what you were thinking.
Right. I thought they were going to make some major changes. They had everything in the pipeline, but in the end, they still are losing a lot of money.
It's only about like 30% capacity or something. So I've been listening to a lot of trip reports, and we may just end up doing a hotel staycation, but we're going to go see if we feel safe. We're going to drive there and just take it a day at a time, see what we can see. So the trivia from last week was, who said the quote, "You are braver than you believe, stronger than you seem, and smarter than you think"?
That was...
It was
Christopher Robin.
Yes, you are correct. And the trivia for this week is, how many isosceles triangles make up the geodesic sphere on Spaceship Earth?
It's going to be a pretty big number.
But not too big. All right. Well, thank you for joining us. We hope you learned something about geodesic spheres today. And have a great week.
Thank you all for joining us. We hope everybody is doing well and staying healthy. And we hope you come back next week.
As you wish.
As you wish. Thanks for listening. Please check us out at countdowntomickey.com. And you can follow us on socials. We're on Instagram under Countdown to Mickey. So thanks so much. And hopefully join us next time.